The spinning ring.
Oh, God, I knew you were going to say that.
Are you going to apply? And I just went,
yes, I am.
Just don't think it was quite the right time for me.
I kind of thought that whole time that you get to make the jewellery was just an illusion of the show.
Mm-mm-mm. Just was like, oh, fuck, I'm going home.
There was no hiding it.
No.
If I could wind back the clock, I would wind back the clock. I was just gutted. I was gutted. Never doing this letting go of every part of me again. Emma, mum of six, refers to herself as a mumpreneur. And I just thought, no, I bloody don't.
Hello and welcome back to the She Who Dares Wins podcast. My brilliant guest today is Emma White. Hi, Emma. Thanks for joining me.
Hello, Michelle. Nice to be here.
So I should give a bit of a grand introduction. You were semi-finalist.
Yeah. Runner-up, I think. Runner-up is better. Official title.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was robbed, but we'll get into that.
Oh, no.
For All That Glitters. And you are a fantastic jewellery maker. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Emma, first question. She Who Dares Wins, Forge Your Own Path. What does that mean to you?
I think it's a bit of a be brave, go for it, get your big girl pants on and crack on.
And I think you've embodied that. So will you just take me back to young Emma?
Oh.
Yeah. So what were you like as a girl? Were you confident?
Yeah, quietly confident, I would say. I was really bookish and quite academic, but at the same time, I loved to sing and I used to get up on stage and sing in front of people. So I kind of had the confidence to do that, but I wasn't maybe as outgoing as I am now. So I guess I'm a bit of an evolution from that now.
And how did you get into the world of making jewellery?
I was quite academic, so the expected route was that I would go to university and I would study something, you know, considered traditionally clever, if you like. So my mum had great aspirations for me to go and study law. And I kind of looked at all those things, but actually what I really loved was my time in the art department. So I applied to go to art college and then didn't get in. I didn't get in. In Scotland, there's only 4 art colleges and it's really competitive to actually get into art college. It was at that time anyway. I assume it probably still is now. So I'd been offered a place to study maths at Edinburgh and Glasgow and all these like really nice prestigious universities. Then also had an application for art college on the go. And then my mother was absolutely furious when I turned down those university places, even though I didn't have anything else to do. So I ended up going off for a year and studying in Arbroath on a course which was just about learning to draw and paint. Mm-hmm. So I spent like an academic year just drawing and painting. And the whole aim of that course was to create a portfolio to then go on to art college, and then I got in.
Okay, so the tenacity to like not give up was there.
Yeah, I guess so.
And also to defy, because I don't think I would have done that, defy... There's my mom for listening to this. You're like, what do you mean? Yeah, that's hard. Especially.
Yeah. My mom's a really strong woman. And she brought 3 of us up on her own. So she proper had a backbone of steel. And so, you know, her opinion really mattered to me. But at the same time, my own opinion really matters to me too.
Love it.
So, yeah, I just kind of decided that was the right path. I don't know. I didn't even really question it, actually. I just thought, right, okay, well, I've not gone this year, but so how can I make that happen?
And from art college then into jewellery, was that quite a quick transition or was there a bit of a journey between?
I didn't go to art college knowing I wanted to study jewellery. The system is slightly different in Scotland. So in Scotland, you go and do like a year when you just kind of do a bit of everything. And then we do 4-year degrees in Scotland. And then you specialise in your second, third and fourth year into your subject area. So my flatmate was the year above me and she was studying jewellery. So I used to see her like sitting sand and things and stuff. And we became good friends. And I used to go and see her in the jewellery department. And I was like, oh, I quite like it in here. This is nice. And then I did a little 2-week block in there. And I was like, yeah, this is the one.
This is it.
This is the one. Yeah.
So what age would you have been then?
Let me think. I would be 19.
Okay, so quite early on then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just loved it. I mean, back to my mum again, obviously a big influence in my life. She's a really glamorous woman. And she was always like fully made up, you know, and she always, like when she went out on a night out, she's a really beautiful woman, my mum, and she's just always immaculately dressed, makeup perfect, and great jewellery on. So, you know, when you look back kind of before that decision was made, there was always a grounding in kind of the aesthetics of adornment. So I guess it was kind of always there.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then from then on, what happened when you left uni? Like, what was that?
Well, actually, I studied animation as well at university. So it started as a bit of a support study, but it had to be 3D animation because we were doing a 3D degree.
Right.
Yeah, so jewelry was a 3D craft. And so I got really into stop motion animation.
Uh-huh.
So I made like a little film kind of based on chess. It was very random. It was a bit strange, actually. And then when I left university, I went and worked for Aardman Animations on Chicken Run, you know, the film. I think there's a new version of this coming out this year.
I know.
They're finally doing a sequel. I think it's 20 years or 25 years this year.
It makes me feel old.
I know, me too. And I made all chicken legs, the first one. So, yes. Yeah, so
that's amazing. Yeah, that's a huge claim to fame.
It's a good claim to fame. So I actually have my name on the credits of Chicken Run, right at the end, like next to the guy that made the tea. Do you know what I mean? But so I worked for, they subcontract some of that work out. So I worked for a model maker that supplied a lot of the armatures. So armatures are like the metal skeletons inside the all the models. So I made all these little skeletal like chicken legs and some monkey bits and all sorts of things.
I love that. Again, that's not a job that anyone would think kind of existed until you kind of fall upon it.
I know. It was just, it happened really naturally, actually. So when I was coming to the end of my degree, there's like this animator's handbook that has all, it's just a little handbook. It was in the library and it had all like the animation industry contacts in it. I have got a really bad sense of direction. It just, like, it isn't in my brain, right? I do not have, you know, some people have like a map in their heads. I just don't have that, right? I get lost in my own house going to the bathroom. I'm absolutely terrible. So I was going through this and I had this boyfriend who was in the north of England and I was quite interested in staying in the north of England because I've got Liverpudlian roots and I'm happy in the north of England. I liked it. So I was thinking, I'll look for some jobs around the north of England somewhere, but I have really bad geography. So I applied to these jobs in Bristol because I thought it was near Manchester somewhere.
Love it.
And then I got offered this job and I was like, yeah, I've got a job. And like nobody got jobs out of art college. It was like unheard of, right? Because there just like weren't any really or very few. So I was like, yeah, I've got this job. And then I looked at the map and I was like, Jesus Christ, it's miles away. Absolute idiot. Because from Dundee to Bristol, it felt like the opposite ends of the earth, you know. So off I trotted to Bristol. Anyway, it's a great city and I had a really nice 9 months there. I worked on that for about 9 months. And then the film was finished. So the contract came to an end. And at that point, I set up my jewellery business and moved up north.
So that you had to be in one place and no one could say it.
What an idiot.
Oh, I love it. So straight into business then, though.
I guess so. I mean, I was self-employed. That first job was subcontraction. So I was self-employed from then on, really. And I've never really, I mean, I've had bits of other jobs, but I've always kind of worked for myself. That's always been really core.
I think that's really interesting, actually. That's something that I can completely relate to. I was self-employed since the age of 21 and I've worked for companies for a long period of time, but I've never been on the books with a company. Mm-hmm. I would say it's because I'm unemployable. I think the worst experience was I went to get a job at McDonald's when I was like 18. I think I'm the only person that's ever been rejected from McDonald's and I didn't get the job. So I was like, that's it. I'm only going to have to work for myself. But I wonder as well if it's just part of, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think a lot of people that I meet that have had the similar journey kind of have this mindset of, I know what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I also want flexibility and be able to kind of like almost design your own life and not have to answer to anyone else. The other half of me is like, no, you're just really stubborn and you can't be managed by anyone.
I don't know. I think there's definitely like kind of, there's a mentality there.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes you know, you meet people and I think, no, they've got more of an employed mentality or they've got more of a self-employed mentality.
Yeah.
And I think there's something around that that's about boundaries. So, you know, for me, in my current role or everything I've done, I've never thought, oh, well, that's not my job. I've just never, that thought just doesn't come into my head. Yeah. It's like, this needs doing. Yeah. Either I need to do it or I need to find someone else that needs to do it. And if I don't know how to do it, then I just need to find out.
Right.
So that's just always been my approach.
Which is a sign of an awesome entrepreneur. Like, I think, yeah. I think Branson said that. He was like, always find people that are better than you to do, fill the gaps, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. And how did you, so obviously the artistic side of things, amazing at making jewelry. The business side of things, you say, you know, you've just got to crack on and do things. Like, how was that? And doing it quite early on, like you were in your 20s, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, also there was an element of not really feeling like I had a choice. You know, the jewelry industry is very centered around London and Birmingham.
Yeah.
So if you're not actually in those areas, you know, you're kind of on your own. So I think had I moved to Birmingham or London, there would have been employment opportunities. Mm. But because I wasn't there and that was kind of just not, I don't even know why I didn't really consider it, but I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, there was no other option than to just crack on. So that's what I did. So I just started making jewelry and I just kind of cracked on trying to get it into galleries and seeing if anybody liked it, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Obviously they did.
Yeah. Yeah, which, they did.
Which kind of brings me nicely, obviously there's a gap here between there and then getting on All That Glitters.
Mm.
So how did you get on the show?
I went on the second series. I was a massive fan of the first series.
Right.
I was actually approached to apply to both series.
Okay.
But a lot of people are approached. They actively went out and looked for people.
Is that because the industry is quite small?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And I guess for doing something like All That Glitters on the TV, you can't just be a skilled jeweler. You also have to have a presence on a screen.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of have to have both skills. When the first series came out and somebody phoned me and said, you know, you're interested in applying for this. And that's not an offer to go on. That's an invitation to apply.
Right.
Yeah. So that doesn't mean you're on just because you've had a phone call.
Right.
Yeah. But, and at the time I was like, okay. And I started writing the application and then I just didn't, and I didn't proceed with it. And I just don't think it was quite the right time for me. I think my youngest child, Mabel, would have been like 2 maybe then.
Oh, right.
Okay. So that just wasn't, you know, I just wasn't there. And then I watched it and thought, oh, I should have applied. And it was interesting because the timing of it all was quite interesting. So it was, the first series was aired during lockdown. And when the final came out, lockdown was the first steps of lockdown easing. So I've always taught jewelry classes. And while we were watching All That Glitters, I had a WhatsApp group with my jewelry students and we watched it in sync.
Oh.
So we weren't actually together, but it was kind of something that brought us together and it was lovely. And so there was lots of like chit chat and banter going on and talking about the jewelry and they asking me about, oh, how do you do this? And so there was lots of that. So that was really nice. It was kind of social, although we were all in our separate houses. And then the day that the final was coming out was actually going to be our first class back. It was the first time that we were allowed to get together again in a group of 6. Do you remember these rules?
Oh,
it just seems bizarre now, doesn't it? So we were going to have this class and then someone went, oh, but it's the final of All That Glitters. And I said, right, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll shove class back a week, come to my house and we'll all wear something glittery we'll all bring a dish and we'll get together. So that was the first time that we'd been able, it was the first time I'd done anything social, really, but it was the first time that that class had been able to come together since the lockdown had like really knuckled down. It was a really lovely evening and we watched and we had a really nice time. We had some bubbles and everybody brought a dish and it was terrific. So I was like a massive fan. I was, you know, it was just a great bit of light relief in what was a really shitty time.
Yeah.
So, and I thought it was great for lots of reasons, but, you know, there was nothing showcasing the jewellery industry.
No.
On mainstream TV prime time.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing, and there has been nothing else but that, to my knowledge, that's really focused on the jewellery industry. You know, so I just thought it was great. And then I saw a massive reaction to it when the classes then kicked back in properly, we had so many people come through the door into classes saying, I want to learn jewellery because I watched this thing on the telly.
Right.
And so we saw loads of people, a fresh influx of interest in learning jewellery skills. So I was like, well, this program's amazing. I absolutely loved it. Even when we were watching the final, my students were like, you've got to apply this year, you've got to apply this year. And in my head, I'd already decided that I was going to apply.
Nice.
And then I started getting phone calls because they were recruiting. And finally, I got a phone call from this one guy and he just said, look, stop, like, just, you need to just apply. Like, we want you to apply. Are you going to apply? And I just went, yes, I am.
That one word. So
yeah,
hard.
I just went, but I had to just take a moment, you know, but I had a really strong sense that it was for me. And
this is really weird. Did you envisage then that you could win it?
Oh, I wasn't at that stage thinking about winning it.
Okay. Just the leap.
I really felt that I could give it a good crack.
Right.
I guess that was it. Like when I watched the first series, I was like, I mean, it was very challenging what they were doing, but I was like, but I could actually give that a good crack.
Right.
Yeah. So there was a little bit of like, oh, actually, because obviously when it was brand new, the people that went in the first years were so brave because they just didn't know what they were walking into at all. But for us that went into the second series, we'd seen the first series. So there was an expectation of an understanding of what the challenges might be and, you know, what would be thrown at us and the time restraints and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I just kind of felt like, I don't know. It was a bit of the stars aligned kind of moment. It felt right.
Yeah, I mean, I've recently gone back and watched the show. I would admit, I mean, I was probably heavily pregnant with a young one, so I kind of missed anything that happened in that period.
Fair enough.
I was just like survival plus anxiety. Yeah. But I went back and watched the first episode and the last episode, and then I think one in between because it was going off iPlayer.
Yeah, yeah.
God damn you,
get
BBC. Yeah.
Put it back on.
Here we go. Put it back on. If producers out there, in fact, I know the producer, I will get back onto them and I'm
okay,
like, you.
Okay.
Yeah. Get that back on so the people can watch it. And it is a little bit like Bake Off.
Yes.
But different. Mm. I thought it was nice and funny in some respects, like obviously when things go wrong. But I think that format works well on telly.
Yeah.
The one thing I've been reading some of the articles that you've written about, you know, how you felt when you were on the show and things that happened. Maybe this is just me, but I kind of thought that whole time that you get to make the jewellery was just an illusion of the show.
Mm-mm-mm.
No.
Nope.
It's the real, most people be like, what are you on about, Michelle? Of course it is. But so you've got the pressure of television. You've got, you know, in a world that you've never been in before with cameras, mics, producers, everything that goes into that. Then obviously, you know, you felt very capable in your own work.
Most of the time.
But how does that work when, because it is like everyone can do their job, but then when you add an external pressure on, how was that?
The time was the thing, was the awful thing. I mean, I loved the whole experience and there was so many good things about it. Overall, a massively positive experience. But the one thing was the stopwatch, that it was just awful. Like the last 20 minutes of any challenge was just awful, just awful. And when things were going wrong, it just felt like the end of the earth, you know, it just felt horrendous. But I knew what was getting into. So I was kind of up for that. And I kind of knew, you know, I mean, other jewelers have said to me since, like, I just couldn't have done it. Like, there was a lot of people have said things to me that are a bit like angry against the production team. Like, they did that to you kind of thing. And I'm like, but hang on, it was a deal.
Right,
you know?
And
it was a deal. It's telly.
Yeah.
You know, I went in with my eyes open. I knew they needed something from me.
Yeah.
And I was hoping to get something in return from them. And what they needed was a dramatic television program.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope I provided. I think I did.
the journey arc on that was incredible. Oof. Like, yeah, I was on the edge of my seat and you had some amazing successes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to focus on this one, but
I
have a question for this. So I've got my notes here. The spinning ring.
Oh God, I knew you were going to say that.
So you talk in the article about how... a crack developed, and then they all rushed over to you because it was going to be TV gold that, you know, how'd you come back from? It's not like a cake where you could, I guess, I've imagined Bake, I've never been on Bake Off or seen too much of it, but you could probably get around that. But when there's a crack in metalwork, I guess it's not an easy fix. But what was interesting was when you wrote about how you teach your students to kind of, you know, fail all the time. And I this is a big thing for me in She Who Dares Wins, and things I've gone through is that I think you have to fail in order to achieve.
Yes.
But when you're on a live telly show.
Yeah, but not then. Just not right then. Yeah.
And you wrote that. You put that, you know, I tell people to deal with failure, but when it was then, like,
man.
What was going through your head? And you dealt with it so coolly.
You know what? I just was like, oh, fuck, I'm going home.
Right.
And episode two as well. I was like, shit. But his thing was, if you know, it was the timing. Because it was literally like there was 9 minutes to go or something like that.
Yeah.
So there was no time to do anything about it, really.
Could you have just, like, hidden it?
There was no hiding it.
No.
Okay. There was no hiding it. It's funny because when I wrote that article, I thought I'd hidden it from the cameraman. And then when I actually watched the episode back recently, I was like, oh no, he was right there. They literally saw it go. So yeah, I actually felt it go before I looked. I felt it go. And I just yanked it. I just yanked it really, really hard. And I just put too much pressure on too quickly. And I was just gutted. I was gutted because I knew that they loved it. And I think, you know, I would have done really well in that episode had that not happened, you know. But you know what? I'm a human being and I messed up. And, you know, it stands true what I say to my students and I say it to my children as well. Like, we all mess up. And what you can do, you know, if I could wind back the clock, I would wind back the clock. But I can't.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just had to, like, deal with it and crack on.
Well, you didn't. Oh, they like it. I have got a drum thing
have
over
you?
There. Yeah.
Quick.
Which one is it? Let's see if I get it. Is it Chimes? We'll have to go with Chimes.
Okay, we'll have that.
I don't know if that worked. No. We'll get right back to our guests, but I wanted to give a big shout out to each and every one of you tuning in. Your downloads, subscriptions, and those shiny reviews you've been leaving, well, they're the heartbeat of She Who Dares Wins. Seriously, without your support, we wouldn't be here sharing these badass stories week after week. Now, here's the scoop. We're currently strutting our stuff without a sponsor, but hey, no sweat. You can keep this adventure alive. Swing by shewhodareswins.com and treat yourself to some empowering merch. Trust me, it's not just gear, it's a statement. And for those Ultimate Insiders, well, why not become a patron? Just £5 a month, and you're not just supporting the show, you're elevating it. We're talking secret bonus episodes with each guest, major discounts on all our merch, and a bunch of other goodies. You're not just a listener, you're a vital part of the tribe. Every bit of support fuels our mission to inspire and empower, so let's keep breaking barriers together. Stay daring, stay unstoppable. She Who Dares Wins. Let's get back to it.
That's great.
But and correct me if I'm wrong, was it the spinning ring that said
not all those that wander are lost?
Here's how I think that came full circle. Is that like a big seller for you now?
Massive.
There you go.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to teach people here, is failures are the best things to do. Like, they might not at the time, they feel really uncomfortable, especially when you're being broadcast to millions of people. But ultimately, that ring is fucking awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's a great design. And actually, I remember when I came out of that challenge and I phoned my husband and I said to him, oh, I've really messed up. And I told him about it. And he was like, oh, well. And I said, but you know what? Because I'd come out of the first episode and I said to him, I don't think I'll feature in that much. And I came out of the second episode and I was like, but I think I'll have got quite a lot of screen time though. So, you know, you got to flip things, haven't you? And look at the positive. And I did. And I was, they did these little clips as well. And I was the clip.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe if you hadn't have done that and you'd have just, like, sailed through. Yeah. Maybe that, like, because everyone wants to fight for the underdog.
Yeah. And that was definitely the narrative. That was how they played it.
Yeah.
One of the producers told me that.
Yeah.
After the event, because there was something that was said at one point, and I was like, I don't really like that. And they were like, well, everyone loves an underdog. And I was like, okay, so that's the storyline.
Yeah.
So they definitely built, like, a narrative around us.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, you could see that in the show. Like, yeah. And it was quite nice, to be honest. I mean, you had some amazing pieces. Like I sat there thinking, how is that possible in that time? Like,
I don't even know now. Yeah. As I sit here.
And then was it the semi-final where Strictly's, what was her name?
That was the final.
That was the final. Was the so final. She chose, of course, right. Yeah. Okay, we have to get to this. Like, okay. BBC, you can sue me.
Okay. And me, probably.
But she picked, Arlene picked.
Arlene, come on. Shirley Ballas.
Oh, God.
Shirley Ballas.
Can you tell I don't watch Strictly?
Yes. Oh. I do.
Oh. I'm like, yeah, my mates will kill me because they're like, what? Yeah, like, this is what?
And
I'm like,
amazing.
I know.
You have to hook in.
Yeah, I'll have to get on it. Shirley picked your piece, which was amazing, and then went on to wear that on the show.
Yeah.
That was the showstopper. That was just used the Bake Off terminology, terrible. That was incredible. For me, that was undeniable. You've won the show. It went another way, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
And lots of people online, as I've researched, had lots to say about it.
Oh yeah, that was weird. That was really weird.
So what was it like getting that far? And then I'm not gonna say falling at the last hurdle because I don't think you did. But how did you take it at the end?
On the day?
Yeah.
I was fine.
Right.
Because there'd been a couple of episodes before where I'd thought I'd done really well. And when the choice was there between me and Piers, they plumped for Piers.
Right.
And so I kind of knew
the
way the land was lying before we got there. I knew he was strong. He was strong. He's a talented, talented guy. I didn't go away upset.
Because you kind of already knew.
Because I felt like I already knew who's going to win, because Piers was strong, consistently strong, whereas I was much more of a roller coaster.
Yeah.
So I had like real highs and then I had a couple of real lows. Whereas he was always, I mean, he had things he messed up as well. We all did. Everybody had disasters, to be fair. But he was really consistently very good. So you know, I knew there was no shame in losing out to Piers because he's a really talented guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're quite different. So it was like, yeah, it was just interesting to see. So when it got to the final, I won those two challenges. I was just like, okay, well, that's interesting. I've just made that decision a bit tougher for them. And I think that's probably what I did.
Right.
And all I did was just make the decision a bit tougher.
So the show ends. I just want to come back to something that I read again in an article that you wrote about being on the show. There's a lot that goes into a show. There's a lot of coming out of COVID. You were pulled away from your family. You talk about how you had your first holiday planned with your husband and your kids, and then filming got set back and you had to basically just not go on holiday. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's hard to deal with, as well as the pressure of the show. And then I take it you had your business at the same time that you're trying to juggle all these balls. Like, how was that? Did you cope well, or?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because I'd always been, you know, the person in our relationship that had, you know, managed the family and, you know, taken on a lot of the like traditional female stuff.
Yeah.
Which kind of started out because obviously after you have a child, you know, your other half's there for a couple of weeks, they go back to work, and then, you know, I was therefore taking on a lot more of the household stuff. And then that kind of continued as it does for a lot of women. And my husband and I had to kind of shift all of that around in order to allow me to do the show.
Yeah.
And I actually think that was quite difficult at the time, but it's been really good for our relationship in the long run.
Yeah.
So he's taken on some of the chores that I used to just always take on, and he's a lot more like, he's more aware of what's going on at school and all that admin. So that's like a full-time job in itself.
Yeah.
Huge, huge. So I think from our relationship point of view, it was a really good thing. The thing about the holiday was hard. Now I could have gone for a few days. I couldn't have gone for all of it because we were literally filming for the last like 3 days of our holiday or something. So I could have gone right before, so that was my choice rather than something that was forced on me by the show. I didn't go for the first half of the holiday because I was like, I actually need to practice.
Yeah.
So, you know, that wasn't something that was kind of, that was my decision to make, to not go on the first few days. I just kind of thought, you know what, this is such an opportunity. I have to just really go for it. And my husband absolutely got it. And he was really supportive, but at the same time, he was really good. I was like, bye. Have a nice time with three children on your own in a motorhome. See ya.
I get it. I quite often, I do the same to my husband. I'm like, am I filming a documentary? And he's like, what? And then I'm like, oh, it's in Spain. See ya. But actually, it is really interesting because I suffered quite badly when I did. We made a film on the girl that rode, Laura, who rode across the Atlantic. And I went out to Spain for a couple of days to film that. And I hadn't really been away from my kids because of COVID. And Teddy was born at the end of COVID. So right. I'd not been away from the kids or him for so long. And I remember landing, and I'm a really adventurous person. We just go traveling and do whatever on my own, even though we've been together all these years. I felt so much mom guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about that in that article. Mm. And you also talk, which is really interesting, about how you kind of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you felt like your identity was, you know, first and foremost being a mom and having that role to fill.
Mm-hmm.
And then the show came along and it was kind of your place to shine.
Mm-hmm.
And was that like a reminder of not losing your identity, but, oh, hold on a minute, there's more to me than just, because I think a lot of women will resonate with that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of women, unfortunately, don't get to experience that. And years pass and mm-hmm. then maybe resentment kicks in. And you talk about being able to have, and I'm so passionate about this relationship shift. Like now, and I know it's hard for a lot of people, but when Teddy was born, my husband, because he's got a very flexible job, had 3 months off. And interestingly, Teddy still thinks that he came out of Tom. We'll get to that, whether that's just I'm a really poor mother. But it allows you to do so much
mm-hmm.
and almost become this like 50-50 that I don't think still society is on board with.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't change it for the world now in the balance that we have. And it's not always perfect balance.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so interesting for you to say that because I think a lot of women need to hear that you were also you before kids, mm-hmm. before being a wife. And so do you think that helped you post-show to kind of just like come a little bit back to who you were and not be afraid to kind of put that out there?
Definitely. I think what was really interesting about it was that there was this narrative built around me that I didn't necessarily see at the time. And then when I looked at it, watching it, I was like, oh, actually, there's a lot of truth in that. So that narrative was that I spent all my days thinking about other people. So not only in terms of my family, but also in terms of like my teaching. And also on my website, I sell other makers' work as well. So I was always prioritizing like sorting out their product page because, you know, I was trying to look after them.
Yeah.
And then with my students, I was trying to like nurture their creativity and look after them. And then I'd go home and I'd have my children, I'd be looking after them. And I'd kind of got a bit lost somewhere along the lines, or rather my creativity had definitely got lost somewhere along the line. But I wouldn't have described myself as that upon going into the show. But when you see yourself reflected in somebody else's vision, and then you realize that that's actually got a lot of truth in it.
Mm.
That's really weird.
Mm.
Really weird. And that sort of process of realizing that there was a lot of truth in that was really helpful in me making the decision that I wasn't going to let that happen again.
Yeah.
That I really needed to hang on to the creativity that I'd been given back by doing the show. Because what it did was it did force me to like take a step back from a lot of things that I was doing. You know, and at one point I did actually close my website down.
Right.
Or my part of it. I took all my products off because I thought I can't do that and this.
Right.
And so I did actually like step back from that. I carried on teaching, but I was like, I've got to just turn my products off for a while.
Which is crazy. This is post-show.
This is while we were filming.
Right.
So I turned off those products because I was like, I've just got to practice. Right. This, I think, was on the run-up to the semi and the final. I've just got to practice. And then when I came out the other side of it and watched it, which was a whole other journey to the filming of it, I was like, okay, I'm never doing this. Like, I'm never doing this letting go of every part of me again. Yeah. I just can't. I just can't do it. I need it. Like oxygen.
Yeah. And ultimately, do you think it helps in family life? Because I feel like when you start to live a bit more authentically and you find yourself again, it just affects like how you are at home, like with your kids and your husband, like, because you are who you are and you've not lost a sense of self. Yeah, it is really interesting. It's something I'm massively passionate about.
Same.
Trying to help other women to kind of like achieve that. And it is difficult. It is, you have to have
really hard.
You have to have a really on board partner.
Yep.
But it can be done. And then post show, I'm guessing a lot of interest in your work and those products shine. And
yeah, I mean, that was mental. It didn't really kick off until the final went out. And when the final went out, my phone just went mental. And I have a little cha-ching thing set up whenever I get a sale.
On Shopify. Yeah, me too. I'm like, it's like a dopamine.
It's great, isn't it? I know, it's amazing. In a workshop, we all go, woo! And it just went nuts. It just went cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. But we'd had quite a long period between finishing filming and the show coming out. It was like a year. So I'd had quite a long time to actually prepare what I wanted to sell.
Right.
Because I'd come out of the process of filming the show and thought, I don't want to make that stuff anymore.
Okay.
Like, I'm somewhere else now.
Yeah.
You know, I've moved on. So I'd kind of cherry picked some of my favorite pieces from the show and I'd developed collections around them. And so I was kind of releasing them as the episodes were coming out. Obviously, I couldn't release anything before. It would have been a bit of a spoiler. So I was releasing them as things came out. So I was actually, I was beating myself up at the time thinking I wasn't prepared enough, because obviously I always create this ridiculously overambitious to-do list that I never, ever achieve. But looking back, I was actually very well prepared. So people were watching the episode, for instance, where I made, you know, the Fatima's hand from the Barbie hand, became a really key collection for me. And literally as that episode finished, I'd go, launch. And it'd go, and it'd be on the website. So then people would go, oh, who's that girl? And they'd find me. And then they'd be like, oh, look, she sells them.
Nice.
Cha-ching. Woohoo.
There's the business mindset right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, because it was such a massive undertaking and I loved it and it gave me so much in the way of like personal development and creative development. But, you know, I did have that goal that I wanted to actually like benefit from it financially as well.
That's the whole point. Like, why would you not? Yeah.
Raise profile.
Yeah.
So that was where the business brain kicked in, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah. They did. Well, let the producers off.
Yeah. I know. Exactly. Exactly.
As long as it all comes good in the end. There you go.
See, you can't even say it. And you know why? Because it's not a proper word, mate.
So we had this discussion about a word, a dirty word. Mom, come on, you're going to have to say it because I can't.
Mompreneur.
It won't allow me to say it because it's so fucking awful.
Yeah.
So was this something someone, like a title someone put on you or?
Yeah. I think it was in a press release that went out when we were filming. On the run up to the release of the show. And there was like a little bio that was released. I think it was the very first thing that came out that was sort of announcing who was going to be on All That Glitters. He was too, there'd been a lot of chat and industry and stuff. Oh, who's going to be on? And now sitting in the corner going, and it came out and it had the word mompreneur in it. And then I think the first time that it sort of made me cringe inside was I think the Scottish Sun did an article.
Oh, God bless the Sun.
God bless the Sun. About me, because I was the only Scottish person in a show. And it said, Emma, mum of six, refers to herself as a mumpreneur. And I just thought, no, I bloody don't. So, yeah, a funny one. A funny one. I guess, you know,
it's going back to what we said is it's pushing that identity of like, let's just focus on, you know, ultimately what you are, which is an artist, a very talented artist, a businesswoman. Why do we need, yes, you're a mom, but why do we need to you know, we don't say that about dads, do we?
No, and I guess that's the thing. And I have spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I've actually just written an article. It's just been published about
it. Okay, we'll link this in the bio.
So, because if I was going to play devil's advocate, right, and put my nice hat on for a minute, I'll take it back off again, don't
good,
worry.
Good.
I think perhaps the root of some of these words comes from a good intention of recognizing what we do.
Okay.
As working mums, right? That it's bloody hard.
Yeah.
Right. Let's just
okay. Yeah, another
let's
fair.
Think about that side yeah. of that, right, for a minute. Because it is bloody hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the issues that we've talked about are there. And I think there's probably, as it was intended when it was written about me in the show, it was intended to be like a compliment. Like, wow, look at what she does.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. She runs a business. And she's got three kids, or as the son decided, six kids. But that's, I've got three stepkids as well, but I haven't birthed them all.
It's like a Sound of Music kind of like. And she still sings in the hills on the weekend.
A little bit, I know. So, you know, let's just give that benefit of the doubt, right? So I think the intention in which it was used came from a positive place, bearing in mind that the show is actually trying to describe us all as whole people, not just as business people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the issue that I have with it is that there's something about it that just says you're playing at it. There's something about it that kind of sounds like I'm knitting something while I'm pushing a baby with my foot, which is not possible because I've tried to like work with the kid in the corner and it's carnage and it's awful and you just end up feeling like you shit at everything.
Yeah.
But there's something patronizing in that term that I really dislike. Like really all the feminist bones in my body just hate.
Yeah.
Hate. So I'm taking my hat off now.
Yeah.
So yeah, because nobody has ever referred to my husband as a dadpreneur.
Mm.
And he actually is a dad of six.
Yeah. Fact.
Because he had the three kids before we met. So that's where the six came in. So he is a dad of six and has been for like 30 odd years, right? So nobody's ever called him a dadpreneur. And then that leads you to the question, well, why is that?
Mm.
And the reason why is because society is how it is.
Yeah.
That the burden of care is still predominantly falling on female shoulders.
Yeah.
And it's true in my family, and it's true in many families, not all families, I know that before I get shot down. But I know that there are exceptions to this rule. But that's why that word exists.
Yeah.
That's why mumpreneur exists and dadpreneur doesn't exist, because the burden does still fall on female shoulders.
Yeah. And it's almost like perception, isn't it, that I get it at home where someone will come to the door and they'll say to my kids like, oh, is that your dad's truck on the drive? And they're like, no, it's my mum's. My dad's a teacher, my dad does the cooking, my mum works in construction. And then it's like, whoa. But that's not normal. I find myself trying to in my old age creep onto like we did at the start, empathy of like, oh, it's because it's been like this for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to change,
I think. It has to change. And I think actually the use of those words, it may have been intended to be like a compliment, like, wow, isn't she amazing?
Mm.
But actually it's not, you know, it doesn't have a positive effect. And, you know, being introduced as a mumpreneur maybe didn't really bring the gravitas that I actually have as somebody that's been in the business for 23 years, you know, with a first class honours degree in a subject that's, you know, won this award, that award, the next award, and, you know, have all this experience behind me and a lot of skill. And I do wonder, you know, did it do me any favours at the beginning? But I think, you know, and I touched on this on an article I've just written, that actually ultimately, you know, because I did so well in the competition and I kind of proved my mettle, if you like, that it didn't do me any damage in the long term, but I just don't think it did me any favours initially.
Yeah. Well, it's about the show. It's about, you know, why bring that in? And that is first. The mum is first.
First, yeah.
So it kind of does, if you're looking at language, it overrides.
Yeah, yes, it's dominant.
It's what you hear first and then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to change, I think. I also think that is just like newspapers. I also had an article in the Sun, or was it in the Daily? No, it was worse, the Daily Star. Ooh. And that was about how being pregnant on site and how that experience was. And they just titled it Mom Builder Builds Two Things at Once, or something along those lines. And I was like, well, I'm not a builder. I was really like, I'm an engineer. And that's not like anything against a builder, but it was just like, but I'm not like, and then I was happy for the exposure, but then afterwards I was like, ugh, like I'd wish I just never got written. Like,
it's a funny one, isn't it? Because on one hand you're like, yay, I'm in a national newspaper. On the other hand, I'm like, oh God, mompreneur.
Ugh. Yeah.
Oh, I wish I could. And I actually asked for it to be removed. Not from the Sun, obviously, that was too late, but from the press release. Because it wasn't until it was there that I realised it was actually in the press release.
Right.
And I spoke to the PR company and said, you know that, is that in my press release? And they were like, yeah. And I said, can we have it out? I don't like it. Doesn't speak to my feminist principles at all.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, okay, but it has already gone out. So it was a bit too late, really.
Yeah, I think it's
the way we live in it. It's just the battle goes on with these kinds of things, really. Yeah. So that was the story around that.
Yeah. Ooh, dirty
word. It's not on my business card. No. Let's put it that way.
Entrepreneur in the bin. Well, I can't even say it, so that tells me.
Mumpreneur in the bin.
Mumpreneur, yeah. God.
I don't have entrepreneur on there either, though.
Well, it's not the kind of thing you say, so why would you?
Yeah. Like really up yourself.
Yeah.
Entrepreneur.
Yeah. You have so many other better titles.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm a designer goldsmith, apparently, after a great debate.
Yeah.
After a great debate, yeah.
Oh, that's an awesome title.
Yeah.
Which leads me nicely to, not nicely, but we'll wrap this up, and you've been an absolutely amazing guest. I've learned so much from you. And yeah, I've been into Emma's studio and it's incredible. Anyone in the Leeds area needs to come up and visit and do some classes.
Yeah. Do some classes, come see the jewellery. Got a showroom.
Yeah.
Buy stuff. Christmas is coming.
Yeah. Oh, there is one thing. Here we go. Because I always forget to do this. But I ask each guest, and it's going to be a little different for you because you sounded like you haven't strayed too far from who you were as a little girl, which seemed quite strong and, you know, knew what path you were going to take. But looking back now on all that you've achieved and everything you've done, would you have any kind of words of wisdom for your younger self?
Like, go study maths.
Yeah, I don't think that would be on the list.
Words of wisdom, that's a tough one. I think I did all right, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, just keep at it.
Yeah,
keep on keeping on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just pile through and
crack on.
Yeah, crack on. I like that. We'll take that away. Amazing. Well, thank you very much. You've been absolutely wonderful.
Thank you for having me.